Welcome to the lifestyle segment of Conscious Leaders. Leadership isn't just about what happens in the boardroom. It's about curiosity, understanding the way we live our lives. It's about how we take care of ourselves, how we manage our time, and how we create balance in our lives. This is the way we live, and it impacts the way we lead. So let's dive in and discover how we can make conscious lifestyle choices that's not only there to improve our lives, but also to enhance the way we show up as leaders. Today, we are diving into a conversation that often doesn't get the attention it deserves, especially for men. While menopause gets a lot of focus, what's often overlooked is andropause, the male counterpart to menopause. These transitions, though different, affect both men and women in profound ways. Joining me to unpack this topic are two incredible guests. First, we have Ronald Abjuvi, a wellness expert and physiologist with deep insights into men's health. Ronald will guide us through the often overlooked journey of andropause, shedding light on how it impacts men physically and emotionally, and what can be done to better support men during this stage as well. Now, we're also thrilled to have Kali Kamatlala, the author of Perimenopausal Global Trotter. Now, she brings a wealth of knowledge and personal experience about navigating the perimenopausal stage and menopause. Though through her book and her work, she's empowering women to embrace these, and she should also help us to shed light on how women experience menopause. Now, without further ado, welcome! It's a finally welcome! Hey!
If I could ululate, I would. Here we go! We are here.
Oh my gosh! Listen, that took a minute. Before you got to see that intro, there was 100 of them. But anyway, moving on. Okay, mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about these M's and A's, right? Mm-hmm. I think like from your perspective, there has been so much progress, the work that you've been doing, and I know that there's still a lot of work to be done. Give us a lay of the land. What does the landscape look like at the current state, and what still needs to be done?
I started with this work in 2016, and it was crickets. Dead silence back then, blue ticks for lack of a better word. And now in 2024, I'd say that we've made quite a number of good strides, whether through in-person conversations with women, whether through corporate SA. I've had quite a number of them that have hopped on board because I've been challenging them to say that we cannot be talking DEI&B and leave menopause out of it. Every organization should be striving to be menopause inclusive, because I mean the bulk of the female workforce is either perimenopausal or on the other side they are postmenopausal. So we've come a long way, and I love that. I mean, we're having this conversation in October, which also is World Menopause Awareness Month, and seeing some of the organizations getting on board to say that, you know what, now we can celebrate or raise awareness for mental health, breast cancer, and also bring menopause, because they're all interlinked, has been quite a success.
Wonderful. But I just want to applaud you. I mean, I see you everywhere, and she's part of our sisterhood, you know, and we all just get so excited when we see the work that you're doing, and keep on going at it. And you do these live streams, right? Like live streams, she's so dedicated to them. Like it's even if five people or one person,
nobody sometimes.
She continues to drive the mission forward. So keep on going. Build the ark and they shall come.
That's how it is.
That's how we work.
Mm-hmm. Or just create the storm, and then you need the arc for them to come.
I love that.
Oh my goodness. Okay, that's a different way of looking at it. Right, Ronald, tell me, what is happening in the world of andropause? You know, it's not, I mean, I heard about it probably a year ago. I heard about it for the first time. It's not something we're talking about. Like November, there is one day dedicated to International Men's Day. We never talk about those things, right? And I think that we need to also shift the focus towards andropause and understand what that is all about, so that we actually make sure that we create inclusivity for both sides. So can you take us through what you're seeing on your side?
Absolutely. You know, even when we look at July is Men's Health Awareness Month. And when we look at Men's Health Awareness Month, they're talking about prostate cancer, erectile dysfunction, and, you know, a little bit on mental health, but that's really where it starts and where it ends. Andropause is, and, you know, it hasn't been yet been given another name of peri-andropause. It's andropause deals with when your testosterone as a man goes below what normal levels are. In that instance, so it's a decrease in your testosterone as a man, and we know that testosterone plays a role in the man as providing more musculature, you know, keeping you driven, sex drive, you know, and so forth. Men could say, and a lot of men do say this, I don't necessarily agree with it, they say, that's the hormone that makes me a man. And often it's a hormone that women are fearful of because I don't want to look like a man, because it's to do with hair growth, it's to do with so much. And it only boils down to because that is what old school chappy rappers used to tell us. And the chappy rappers were the aunties on the stoops that used to read magazines and gossip columns. Oh, did you hear this? Oh, this thing is not working. Oh, this one.
Like
and,
that.
And that leads into the propulsion of information that is not fully correct. Not taking away from the story of an experience, but there's an opportunity to change the story when you understand what the information is and factual.
So I want to start with you, and I want to ask, you know, yes, you know, there is this thing about, I mean, I can totally relate estrogen and testosterone and then all the other gins that comes with it. But I think from my perspective is I know that perimenopause has a huge impact on our emotional state of being and how we show up. Does that also resemble in andropause? Is it got the same effect, or is it just the physical?
The majority of it sits in the physical.
Okay.
Because we know that it leads into, like I said earlier, hair growth, deeper voice, more musculature, less strategically placed padding, hashtag Mkaba. And yes, politically correct, yeah? But also we know that it's got a lot to do with aggression. It's got a lot to do with, you know, driving that man issue of I'm a man and I'm going to be this man and I'm a lion and all of that nonsense that goes with that generalization. But here's the thing. The emotional impact stems, I believe, from imposter syndrome. Because the minute you start getting the bulge around your belly, the minute you can't start, the minute you can't continue to last longer than 2 minutes when you're practicing fitness between the sheets, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, we get it.
Get it?
I'm just saying. The minute you now need to start walking around as a man with blue pills and other pulls, and the minute you now need to seek validation for the manliness that you once had, your virility that you once had, that becomes a problem. What do we call it as men? Midlife crisis. Let me get a new car. Let me get a new this. Let me get whatever else goes with that. And that, I believe, is to do a lot with imposter syndrome, and it's the first time men are dealing with this. Where my fundamental belief is that, woman, this is the second time you're dealing with a change. As you go through puberty and menstruation, you are dealing with a change, and you need to delve into the emotions of that change. Because you literally, if you're looking at what happens physiologically, you know, menstruation is a physiological exercise that is phenomenal in its own physiological way. But along with it, you have to deal with the emotional component of it as well. And men are neonatal because we don't go through that. When we go through puberty, this happens. That's really it that happens. Whoa, something's happening down there. Whoa, it's alive. What's this? And that's what happens. We don't deal with the deeper emotional issues. So the emotional issues are not necessarily linked to testosterone directly, but it's linked into, I believe, the fact that we haven't gone through that. And as men, do we go through emotional opportunities for growth or to ignore? And then the imposter syndrome, I believe, is a massive component.
And how would you say that is showing up for women, if you listen to what Ronald just said?
How does it link to how it shows up for women? I think women, we better prepared in terms of we expected to be soft. We're supposed to be in touch with our emotions, with our feelings. Nobody really bets an eyelid or an eyelash when a woman is being emotional or expressing what they are feeling with. And as you said, that the aggression that comes then later with andropause. And then women already, they deal also with their own emotional, whether it's the mood swings, the rage and all of that. But we've had almost a lifetime of doing our best to know how to channel our emotions. The moment we are aware what perimenopause is bringing with, then we are able to tap into that point of reference that, you know what, it does not mean that I am weak if I am embracing this. It does not mean that I'm weak if I am showing up in this way. And I'm just sitting here just in awe because of how you're painting the picture, because I'm picturing a man that is into andropause phase and a perimenopausal woman, the strife that it brings when we are coexisting together and what that it means, especially because we hardly know about this. Yeah. We hardly get taught that this is what we think midlife crisis is, means like loss of libido, or if not, then he's going to go out and be buying the car and be cheating, looking for a younger woman. But we do not look at the emotional aspect of it and how it can lead to GBV. So,
Absolutely. And the GBV is, you know, the physical violence that manifests, but the emotional trauma. Because if you don't hold a space to understand before you want to be understood, and it's reciprocal, right? For men to understand more of what their wife partner is going through, and for the wife and partner to understand more. This means going to doctor's visits, sitting and understanding what it means, doing your own homework and research, trying to figure out where are we at. And if you don't have the ability, and you and I speak about this often and as well, Tolly, when you talk about if you cannot connect on a level beyond the physical, when you're dealing with strife and changes that you, that as men, we have very little to understand it, never mind feel it. We tend to look at extraneous opportunities to be cathartic. And women are saying, but it's intrinsic for me. And that disconnect happens this way.
Sure.
And that way you find girlfriends, boyfriends, anything else in between. Now it's online virtual friends and virtual realities, things happening. But you are distracted from dealing and holding a space for each other and self. And what happens? It becomes destructive to yourselves as individuals, to your union, and if there are kids involved, to the kids.
But I mean, like, if you just look at divorces and the age where that happens, it is right there, right? Yeah. I mean, what is the average age for andropause?
It's changing. It's changed.
Yeah.
It's like perimenopause.
Yeah.
It can happen up to 10 years before you actually go through menopause.
Huh.
That's what the stats show us, right?
Okay.
And we had a discussion earlier. Now, here's the thing about andropause. When you are stressed and now you are relying on alcohol and substances to dull the stress, even in your 30s, you could be going through the periandropause because there's a decrease in your libido because stress is increasing cortisol.
Sure.
When stress increases cortisol, you go through that, okay, I need pulse powders and potions, which compounds the chemical reactions in the body, which negates what testosterone should be doing.
Huh.
So it could happen even in your 30s. And we find that with the stress and the pressure of workplaces, and with the fact that men are more often than not all, are disconnected from dealing with the emotions of what the vulnerabilities, their inner walls, that it takes a crisis for them to now revisit what they have to work with and to reach out for help because I'm a jitter.
Yeah.
I'm a outie. I'm a guy. Guys, we will drink whiskey and go to the braai. But I don't drink, so I'm not interested in that, right? I'm going vegetarian, so I'm not interested in your nyama. But that is what happens. We sit neck up and rather than work on neck down, which is the emotions. So andropause could happen even in your 30s. And what is often the indicator when men realize they should be doing something? When something goes wrong with themselves.
Sure, this is fascinating. I'm learning a lot just in that moment over there. But I want to share something very different with you that will maybe give you perspective, right? So a woman's cycle is typically supposed to be 28 days. Do you know that in the ancient times, women's cycles were actually alignment with the moon, full moon, 28 days. So as the moon goes, now remember the moon is also the resemblance of emotional states. So like the seasons of it's four seasons in one cycle. as you are going through your 28 days, you're going through a constant evolution of emotions, like it is with the moon. And I've always found it very fascinating because it explains how women hold seasons and holds the planet within their bodies and that evolution that happens within us. And I think that we are probably at a position where we are more emotional because of that, and I think that gives us an advantage. And it's interesting for me is to listen to how challenging it actually should be, and based on our previous conversation that we've had, to tap into emotions is a lot more harder work for a man than I think it is for a woman,
because we don't get taught that.
I think from a physiological
perspective. So let's think about it physiologically and work with me on this one. That in the reproductive system that is in order, there's nothing wrong, there's no endometriosis, there's no polycystic ovarian syndrome, you're functioning, fairly in a way that it should be, right? Optimally. Mm. We know that the one egg 1 month comes from the one ovary. Next month, it shifts. Mm. You're born with X many eggs in your ovaries, right? Mm. But at every one of those touch points, something could go wrong, right? We know that the hormones that are impacted is estrogen, progesterone. We know what happens with that. We know how those hormones begin to shift and adjust the minute the egg is preparing to be released from the ovum. Goes down the fallopian tube now to be waiting for the sperm to do its breaststroke, butterfly, backstroke, whatever it does, is one where different hormones get released. So testosterone's got a component, and there's other hormones that have a play. And the minute that the changes happen within the hormonal levels, within the 28 days, those hormones also impact the being of a woman, because at that young age, you are literally bleeding. So things are coming together. It's a point and opportunity, because puberty means you can now become pregnant.
Yeah. Mm.
So the body and the emotions in the body prepare you for that. So again, in the brainstem, right? The brainstem is the trauma. You look at which area in the brain is working, how do these hormones affect the blood flow as well, etc. And what happens is that you now have to go through a grieving process because you are losing. So from a young age, are we holding a space for our young girls?
I think the more modernized we are getting, the more we're moving away from such. Because, in the olden days, when a girl will hit this phase of life, she will be taken into isolation.
Yes.
Because, as you see, it comes with so much. Then it's a period of just rediscovering yourself. But now it happens, if you're 13, you're already going to school. If it starts on a random Tuesday, it's like, we've had the conversation. Here's your sanitary
towel. Not even the conversation. Yeah. Many of us don't even have that one.
And then life moves on. And then you get older. It's work. It's all of that. And, you look at organizations in one particular day, how many women are in different phases of the cycle?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And everybody has to show up and prepare, produce, and be their optimum best.
Totally.
But nobody is taking into consideration that. And then you add the men also that are also going through their own transitions, because we never speak about that. Then we wonder why the workplace is filled with so much toxicity. Everybody's complaining that, oh my God, work is like this and that and that. Because we're all showing up carrying so many different things, but it's all about delivering. These are the targets. These are the deadlines. But if we were to step back and approach it in that sense that, you know what, deliverables are important, but before you become a delivering person, you are an individual.
And a human first.
Yes, a human being.
Yeah.
That is...
And I think that we have lost our ability to understand what it means to be human and our interconnectedness with the planet and interconnectedness with everything around us. I mean, just to the earlier point when I was talking about women's alignment with the moon, like in the Stone Ages, women that would only give birth in the moonlight. Her body was trained to have... to be with the cycle of the moon to protect herself against danger. And I think like our cycles that are all over the place, is also one of the big challenges, because that is also emotional regulation. I mean, it is trying to understand that is also a whole new thing. Like, listen, you can't talk to me about emotional intelligence on day two of my period. End of story.
Go back, choose another
like,
day.
It's not a conversation we can be having. And I think that it was my husband that actually pointed out to me, listen, day two, you're a handful, right? And I've actually learned that and there's Dr. Maltz that talks about this, is that learning to understand, for us as women, to understand our periods, right, is to say, okay, right, I am very fierce on this day. This is where I need to make bold decisions.
Yes.
Right. So I plan my calendar based on those particular days where I know, okay, right, here I'm fierce. If I'm going to be fierce on this day, am I having fierce conversations? Because that's the time that I want to do it. I think that's the only way that I can manage it because I don't think it can go any other way. But anyway, but I hope I'm not the only one, right? I mean, what is your research showing you?
Actually, before you even ask me that, as I'm listening to you sitting here as a postmenopausal 46-year-old, I'm thinking, like, since we do not have those cycle, like, changes anymore, because, I mean, you are at this stabilized, no longer day two. And it's one of the silver linings, actually, of postmenopause, because normally when we speak about menopause, you're always focusing on the not so good. It's such a heavy, but it's like, that's one of the positives, because you come into your own. Once you've hit menopause and you're on the other side, you can make the decisions anytime. You are more in control of your emotions than before. Hence, I think it's important that we always make comparisons, perimenopause, postmenopause, because most postmenopausal women always say, we are forgotten. All these conversations when it comes to menopause, once it hits the 12th month without a period, nobody's asking us, how are we navigating this, what is happening, you know? But back to what you were saying, what you were asking, which I'm gonna say that it's a brain fog moment happening right now.
It's a what moment?
Brain fog moment, which is real. I love when brain fog moments happen like that.
Because
like we don't plan it. It's just like I got sidetracked. I off-ramped because I wanted to say what I needed to say. And now it's back to the question that you were saying.
I was talking about the calendars.
What am I finding now? How is it looking like for women out there and their experience during this phase? I think the more women are actually in touch, like I'm coming from the Menopause Summit yesterday, there was in Mhlanga, and it was very interesting to hear women just sharing how being in touch with their cycle has done for them compared to back then when they were just navigating it, not knowing what's the day. They just know that I just want to kill people during a certain point of the month. But now that they know, as you say, how I show up at work during this phase of the month, am I rather burying my head, doing research, being away from people, or am I at this phase of the month where I'm saying, okay, fine, where are we networking? Where are we going? Where am I going to look for opportunities? So the power that is coming with all these conversations, the emphasis of understanding the cycle and the role that it plays is reaping tremendous effects, and not just obviously in the workspace, even socially and in the romantic front, because men normally bore the biggest brunt in terms of our romantic relationships. As you were saying, that it's your husband that noticed that day two is the no-go, because he spends so much time with you. So it is important that we inform and empower ourselves first.
Yes.
And also know that everybody's also experience is valid. Just because you've had like day two, what if maybe for you it's not day two, maybe it's day four. So it means spend time with yourself. Be intentional about it. We no longer, as I mentioned, in the olden days where you've got that hibernation privilege to really sit, but carve out pockets in the busy lifestyle to always connect with yourself, because we're continuously evolving. Because, I mean, your husband can be like, okay, I knew day two. But because you are always evolving, what if it's no longer day two and then he misses it? But also, if you are spending time with yourself, then you can't be the one that raises the flag to say that it's no longer this.
Yeah.
You need to be mindful on this day. So it is beautiful to see the strides that we are making through it being informed, through being empowered, thus being able then to ask for all the necessary support that we need from our partners and everybody that we coexist with.
But even at the workplace,
yeah,
because that's bringing your whole self.
Yeah. Yes.
Unapologetically your whole self into a space. And I love what you've said, because when you think about workplaces, if you on that day where it is like, yo, it's like fire and brimstone, like I'm taking off heads today, and you're sitting in meetings and your colleagues, men or women, don't understand. Remember, you don't need to tell them the stories about the lesson. Guys, this is whatever the language is that you choose to use in the workplace. Then the men don't get back against the wall and it's like fire on fire. Because that is what will happen. And that is happening. And that leads to bullying, harassment, you know, ill culture, toxic cultures that you described earlier. This is beautiful, because when you bring your whole self, because you chose to understand over your journey, and then men, we wait till it's too late. When it's too late, then we're like, oh, I must go fix this, you know, and that's where the opportunity exists for men. But the invitation for both is one of where and how do we connect for what the outcome needs to be for the collective. The workplace is a collective outcome, right? For home, what is the collective outcome? If it means that you cannot have sex with your husband for 2 or 3 days, let us discuss this thing and we'll have double up sessions in week three. Or some whatever works for you. Or is that the opportunity for you to work on intimacy and connection rather than slicing and dicing?
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask now a very strange question, but I'm interested to know, because, you know, I believe that also, you know, being in touch with your sexuality is your creative force. And being able to tap into it. So in a time where we have a lot of loneliness and we have a lot of people, you know, going through perimenopause and even starting very soon in their lives and all of that, what is that doing to the human race's creativity? Because there is one thing that I know for sure is that we do need to be exposed to our sexual side in order to give birth to creativity.
When I look at that,
I know it's a little bit.
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember that Showmax show that won a SAFTA award this year?
No, I've not been up to date.
Sex in Afrikaans.
Yeah,
where it shows how, and some people call it sexual deviancy, from swinging to latex to toys to going to venues in Johannesburg down the road from us, where you can explore everything that you want to sexually. It is done in the alleyways and behind closed doors, because we are living in the role of what we think we should be according to society, rather than the real of what fills and fuels us. Hey, what happens in your room is your room with your husband. Good luck to you guys.
Or not husband, or anything, or
whatever else. But also the impact of technology.
Yeah.
People are now disassociating from the real into the virtual. Did you read about the story recently where a woman married her AI avatar?
And
then divorced herself, because that's who your AI avatar is. So we are sitting in a space where the opportunity for connection is lacking, but the creativity stems from what Freud calls id, ego, and superego, right? That primal need of sexuality. Hey, we're here on this earth to make babies. And if you can't make babies, go practice. Whether you practice with multiple partners or one partner, and to each their own. But that is what drives us. And the creativity within that sense, I believe, is hindered. And the understanding of the changes, because every woman goes through different changes. Every woman is different in the experience of perimenopause and menopause. And a lot of women talk about painful sex, dryness in the vagina. And men would say, I don't do it for you anymore, so I'm going to go somewhere else.
And also, while you're talking about that, I always say that I love the research that is happening, because we only knew a certain number of the symptoms, and we thought that there was that. But as more and more women, or men in this case, I'm assuming with andropause, the more we speak about it, men are going to own up and share their experiences, and then we'll have more information. But when it comes to the symptoms, there used to be like 12, more research, then it was 34, then it was 90. Now it's over 100. Because, I mean, when you look at it, every woman's experience is valid. And some will say, I did not struggle with loss of libido. Actually, my libido went through the roof. I continuously now want to swing off the chandeliers. And my partner's looking at me as like, what is this? What is going on? Others will say, I'm not struggling with vaginal dryness also. Just like with hot flashes. Others, they're like, I get chills. I get cold. Yeah. So it is important that every time we are speaking about, I guess, the symptoms, we always am aware that it's always relative to that person. And also that as men are listening to us and hearing about what is supposed to be happening when women hit perimenopause, then they must not think that there's something wrong with their partner when she is not feeding the expected loss of libido, that vaginal dryness, because then sometimes he can look at you as like, she's always wanting it. She's working late now at the office. She's changing her style because, I mean, also during this phase of life, it's an evolution. It's like a rebirth. You come into your own. Like yesterday, it was even mentioned that it's almost like a two-way meeting at the door for partners, because men normally are working so hard at their younger age. Then as they hit midlife, they are slowing down. They want to spend more time at home. Women are done raising children and all these other responsibilities. Now they want to leave the home, rediscover themselves, new experiences, new everything. And then they are sometimes going to miss each other because it's like, why are you getting dolled up like this? You want sex all the time now. Are you getting it somewhere? Are you going to all these places that you just mentioned? And if they're not having those conversations with each other, then strife again. It continues. So this conversation, I think it is brought so in so many ways, because also as you spoke about sex, one of the research that I had done, it was showing that yes, women will lose that interest as they go along, but also women are working extra hard, chasing dreams and goals, relationship, like it's like the stress. Sometimes women are putting off relationships. They're hardly having sex, some, and there's so many terminologies that are tied to that. And research says that the more women are not also having sex, then their hormones, they go to sleep. Hence, you're finding more cases of premature menopause. And then you look at me, I was on a journey of abstinence for a number of years, for a number of reasons, like rediscovering myself and all of that. And then when I was doing my research, then I'm like, I abstained for a number of years, thinking I was doing right for myself. And then research is saying that the body is so silly. If you're not using it, you're not having babies, you're not having sex, then your hormones go to sleep.
Then now, survival mode, right?
So are we supposed to just continuously just have sex so that everything is working at its optimum best? It's a conversation to be had, because it's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. You want to have responsible sex, then you're sending things to happen before time. So it was a very interesting research, and I do touch on it actually on the book, and I just left it hanging that we need more because then...
Oh my gosh, here comes robots. Like, it's coming.
No, they're here already.
I know, but it's coming. It's coming into marriages, like, one by one. Like, it's, you're going to see, like, you're going to see a delivery in every street, like, coming in. But listen, I mean, like, on a serious note, I mean... Listening to this is very profound for me, because I'm going like, we're starting to understand a lot of the symptoms around women, because there's a lot of conversations, global outrage happening. But what is the symptoms for andropause? Like, is there things, specific things, that, like, you know, we want to know the little things. Right. We don't want to, we don't like broad. We want to know laser focus. Like, what is that little things that we need to start looking for in our partners to know if they're going for andropause, that we can be their alerts?
So it's a symptoms of having low testosterone. So you're looking at, there's additional middle age spread. There's a lot of disinterest in activities that used to fill and fuel them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of distraction in the context of decreased sexual libido. That's standard.
Yeah.
That is absolutely standard when you look at low testosterone. You also look at, there's decrease in musculature within the men. Hair loss is becoming frequent as well. You're looking at, you know, there's a little bit of grays. Hello? Can you see my grays here? I have several gray hairs. That happens, but also you're looking at issues of, and the main indicator of that is, of course, when you're looking at the scrotum and the penis, and of course sexual functioning, because that's where it goes down. And what happens with men then is, if a man starts showing interest in online or digital engagements to find other fulfillment. Because remember, when you're having sex, there's an adrenaline high that goes with it as well. And remember with men, I'll speak from a man's perspective, maybe not all, but from my perspective, the hunt was more important than the deed. Because the deed doesn't necessarily last longer than a couple of minutes. For some miraculous people, it's a lot longer than that, right? But it's the hunt, because the hunt fills that innate feeling of, I'm a guy, I'm still a hunter, I'm on the prowl, yeah, I can close the deal, I can get this girl, get that lady, etc. But those are the physiological symptoms you look for. The behavioral ones are very vast. I can't pinpoint it for you. If you are in touch with your partner and you see changes in behavior, like with your children, how do you know your child might have depression or dealing with stress or bullying? You look at changes in behavior that are longer than a period of, you know, a week or two.
What I'm finding fascinating around the conversation we're having is like it's so like with menopause, like that fine line between menopause and mental health, where it gets misdiagnosed, right? And listening to what you're also saying is like not wanting to attend certain events that always used to want to attend. Like one could easily start perceiving that as being a mental health issue. And I wonder sometimes if the mental health diagnosis that men are also getting is exactly the same as what we are experiencing as women in menopause.
Similar.
Yeah.
It's very similar. So men would not say, I'm dealing with a depression case, I'm dealing with burnout, I'm dealing with fatigue, I'm dealing with stress. Look out for that language. Because often if I'm fatigued, I'm tired. I want to sit on my couch. I don't want to do anything. Go out? No. I don't have an interest in a date night anymore. Because why? I'm moving away from the connection because I either don't understand or want to relate to emotional right now because I think it takes too much from me. Or I don't know how to deal with this physiological change that I'm dealing with. So I'd rather than just sit and say, no, I'm tired or fatigued or there's stress at work. Listen to the language that gets used, but it's often then, when you look at stress, we are built to deal with stress. We are not built to deal with distress as humans. And if distress compounds, there's a very thin line between increasing your mental health vulnerability that can shift to a mental illness. Because the language that we use between our own ears as men is more destructive than it can be constructive, because we tend to use a lot more harsh and negative, impactful words. And that's the longest conversation I have every day.
Wow.
So we've got to be very mindful. And it's very intuitive because there's no set parameters. And this is being unpacked year on year. And hopefully one day soon we'll get to where we have over 100 potential symptoms. But right now we know of a few that we should be aware of. But the biggest thing is, for a woman or, you know, whoever your spouse is, if you're noticing big changes in your partner that is out of the norm, you need to begin to address that. And one more thing is, do men take their partners to go with them for their prostate exam or to the doctor for the annual checkup? Not to see it happen, but to listen to what it means. And do men go with their wives to their gynees to understand? Not to see the pap smear, how it gets done, but to go and observe and listen to what is going on, so that they could understand in order to support.
Wow, that is very good advice.
And it's interesting that you mention couples coming together for consultations, because another example that was made yesterday, because sometimes we don't want to expose our vulnerabilities because as it is, I mean, menopause, like the shame, the stigma, oh my God, I'm over the hill, my value and all of that. So if I'm sitting with him and my guy is saying those things, how is he going to be looking at me? Will he use those things against me at some point? Is he going to give me the right support? So they made an example about how a couple can start. He accompanies you. Firstly, he can wait in the waiting rooms for the first appointment. Then at the next one, maybe he can come in, but he does not participate, but he's just there. Then you continuously move the goalposts up until he actually also has questions. Because sometimes, I mean, for example, if you're struggling with vaginal dryness and that's what you're treating, he can actually say that, when you are experiencing the dryness, maybe this is what I'm feeling when I'm inside. Because we do not know what men are feeling during that time. Because, I mean, the focus is always on the woman. It's like, oh my God, stop, stop, stop. But what is he feeling when he has tried to penetrate you when you dry? Does he get any cuts? Does he get it? What happens? Psychologically also, what is the effect of that on him? Even things like hot flashes, I mean, they play a role getting a hot flush, me did. Do we stop? Do you fan me? What happens? Do I curl away in shame, in embarrassment? Totally. What do we do during that time?
And the pressure for the man, let's say that's example.
That is,
you're telling
insane.
Me to get this up again once you pause me.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah. What happened?
Because what are you dealing with?
Because men are caught into what we used to be.
Mm.
And as you get older, your refractory period is the period by which you can get another erection.
Mm.
Gets longer as you get older.
Sure. Mm.
So in Kasi language, it's, I can do 2 rounds, 3 rounds. Now it's like, I can do a quarter round.
Yeah.
Speak to me next week. And that is the reality. So without understanding and being present, I love what you said.
Mm-hmm.
You've given us the how-to.
Mm.
And I love that. Because maybe at that point is that you could explore together a different tier of connection.
Yeah.
Babe, what kind of lubricant should we go out there and find that could help you to help us?
Mm.
You know, these kinds of nuances.
Yeah.
And is it an opportunity for men to realize it's not always about penis and vagina? Mm. That's a big part. But it's also maybe about, hey, are we connecting? What is intimacy like?
Yeah.
Is intimacy holding hands and going on a date and going to maybe go to a sex shop and see what is lubricant? And hot flushes. Hot flushes are critical because men also go through that. Don't get me wrong. Not as severe.
Yeah.
But if the hot flushes are impacting your sleep, now your partner wants an aircon on. You don't want it on. They're sleeping peacefully. You're like, I haven't slept. Your ghrelin hormone is out of whack, lead you to eat more, you're not exercising enough, you're getting a bigger middle-aged spread, compounding the lack of testosterone. What happens then? You're losing confidence in yourself. But why?
Yeah.
And maybe at that point, it's like, okay, babe, you go to that room. If you have it, I'll go to this room.
There's nothing. And I think that there's something. I mean, I remember when my parents the bedroom was like,
Whoa.
This is not good, right?
Mm.
But I think we need to reframe of what that means. I think it comes back to having the conversation and saying, okay, right, this is what my body's going through. Because I know, and I mean, I'm only in the state, I'm not where you are. I literally get up 6-7 times at night.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband needs to sleep through the night.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I can't go and sleep on the other side because I'm like, but I feel so embarrassed. But at the same time, I'm so grumpy.
The effects of a lack of sleep are real.
It's a real
thing. It's a reality, right? It's something as fundamental as that, as leading and lagging indicators.
Mm.
And again, if we just took time to understand.
And also tune out social platforms, because I remember talking about separate beds. There's this other soapy where the couple, they've got massive beds.
Yeah.
Same bedroom, but the space also in between the beds. And the younger ones are asking, but how are they still then navigating the coitus part of things? And then it was interesting to follow the conversations. But as you're saying, that ultimately you need to find what works for you. Because as you say, would I rather sleep in the same bed than disturb my partner the whole night with my endless bathroom trips, or just the insomnia that is just happening? Yeah. Or would I rather have my own bed or sleep in the other bedroom?
Mm.
It doesn't matter. Because also, as you say, that the connection is not the same. Sometimes women, they suffer through this fatigue that sex is the last thing that they want at the end of the night when they've done everything. I say most women now, they pride themselves on being prayer warriors. They wake up at 3 and after praying, there's your opportunity then to get your groove going, because you've managed to sleep. Maybe you're refreshed. Who said that sex only needs to happen as the last thing at night? It can be just that
on
or
the
just
middle
before.
Of the day.
Yes. Yeah. First thing in the morning, in the middle of the day. But it's important that we tune out what people are saying on the social platforms is the only way, or is the expected, or is the norm. Find your own norm that works for you, and continuously do performance appraisals also, relationship appraisals,
performance
whatever
appraisals,
that you want
KPIs.
To do. Let us out.
OKRs.
OKRs,
y'all. No, but I love that, because that is so amazing, because my lens, as you know, as a single person, is as I get involved in another relationship, I don't know who, I don't know when. So you went on an abstinence journey. So did I. I'm still in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because sex for me was my drug. when I was younger. I don't drink, I don't smoke. And it became a distraction rather than something to connect or vibe with. And I chose that I will not be held ransom by Freud's theory. And it forced me to work on other facets within myself. But I find that when I did that, I valued myself more. And whoever I now meet or want to get involved with, this is what I can give. This is who I am.
I love
this
that.
Is, you know, my expectations from what I can offer and what I would like from my partner. Do I want to have sex 10 times a day? No. My God. Especially in summer. Do you know how hot it is out there? You know? But there's so many things that I've now value, and now I've learned the weaponry of communication to build connection so that I feel like I can belong with someone. So that is an opportunity for self that I'm on, and a journey, and it's an opportunity for a couple.
Yeah.
Or a throuple, or a quadruple, whatever works for you.
Yeah. To do as well. Because everybody has a different way of how they want things, and that's what makes us all human.
Yeah.
But I want to touch on a different topic, because I think this one is very true for us as women, is the conversation. And the conversation, like we talk about with our partners and having this conversation when we have been deprived from that conversation, even before the big period, your first period started, I still know where I was, when it happened, how it happened, and I found out I thought it was dying. I really didn't know what it is because my mom gave me a book called Amper 12. And I, with my ADHD and my whatever, I'm not a big fan of reading. So I never read the book. And I didn't read the memo, whatever. And then, when it happened, it was such a traumatic experience. And I have still deal with the shame every month when my cycle starts of what happened on that day, because it was a shameful day. It was not a proud moment because of how it happened and, not knowing what's going on in front of my nephews. And it was really, really hectic. And I think that I'm not the only one. I think a lot of us go through it. But every month when your cycle begins, it's a reminder of the conversation or the shame that was removed. And I saw something so beautiful the other day, and I was like, wow, why can't we go back to the way the tribes have done things? Because it was so beautiful. This woman took her daughter. It was her first day, and she took her to the river. And this is, I think it's Nawai or somewhere exotic where it's part of the culture. When it's the girl's first period, they take her to the river and the mom kneels in front of her and celebrates her and actually this victorious moment and starts crying and like literally elevating her and celebrating this beautiful moment with her and giving her flowers and I get goosebumps. Like it's a whole ceremony of celebration, intimate between the mom and daughter. And I think those things bother me because the same for andropause. We don't know enough about andropause, but we need to know. These conversations need to happen between father and son, mother and daughter, because if we don't have that, I don't think that we will pay attention to that in the future.
And I like the symbolism of marking all of those milestones. I always say, I happened into menopause just like most women because of the lack of information. And I do touch in the book about how I had to grieve, not celebrating or pinpointing when my last period was because it just like poofed because I did not know what was happening. And it's something that happens to a lot of women. Most of us, we can pinpoint when we had our first period.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when the last one was, we hardly. And obviously also because of the shame that is tied to this phase of life, women just coast through it. They don't want to make a big deal out of it. And one of my big wishes is like, we need to have menopause parties.
I love that.
The moment you hit this, because I mean, it's a privilege to live long enough to reach, whether it's andropause, menopause, whether it happens at the natural age, but getting to this phase of life, it means so much. And I mean, there is the wisdom also that comes with such. You rediscover yourself in so many ways. You learn to live also with more agency, because I always say that once you hit certain points in life, you're like, you know what? I'm closer to exiting here. unlike when you still mm-hmm. think like I still have the rest of my life, when you still have just hit puberty. And the more we celebrate this last phase of life, I think that's where we're going to see so much change also, because everybody is like, it's a celebration to look forward to.
Yeah.
Then I talk about it. I share about it. But because right now it's seen as like you're over the hill, you've reached your shelf life. If you're still single, who's still going to give you a second look? Hence, that's why even in my case, when I was still like looking and actively to date, they're like, when do you bring up this conversation that you've gone into premature menopause? Because I mean, I'm still in my 30s. Because do you want to scare that guy away? Because if he hears that, is he going to want to get to know you? Do I then window dress, mislead him and not tell him that this is who I am and this is what I come with? And they're like, no, why should I window dress, mislead a person? Let them know that I've gone into premature menopause in my 30s. You want to stay? We move together. You want to leave? Then you leave. Same as when I was on the journey of abstinence also. I mean, first night sex or a few months into it. And then you saying that you're on abstinence, do you declare before time to say that if you're getting to know me, just be prepared that we're not. We're going to be naked in every sense, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, but physically, we're not going to go there. Then let them decide. So it is important that we celebrate every phase that we are in, every milestone that we are in, and that's how we're also going to win the shame that is tied to andropause, the shame that is tied to perimenopause or to menopause.
100. And you know, like, Molly.
Can you see the eye? Can you see the eye? One more time.
Oh my God.
Say my name.
Molly. My eye keeps on going. I'm going to have to say that anyway. But I think, you know, you and I have had such deep conversations about spiritual awakening that happens when you start going through your perimenopause. And it's something that I found has been profound to such an extent. And I think that we as women actually don't know that it's happening until you're like, oh my gosh. And also because the world's talking about it more, you actually starting to pay attention to it. But I mean, there's so many aspects to it. I think that it's really a matter of just understanding that although we are different, we still sow the same. And that there, it's like John Foster Pedley this morning when we interviewed him, John Foster Pedley, when I was interviewing him this morning, he was saying, we are so concerned about always looking at how different we are from each other. Can we just get back to looking at how similar we are, and getting back to also really understanding that as much as we're different from each other, we're also still the same. And it's good to know, you know, that andropause, that there's also a lot of work that needs to be done to drive awareness around that. And, you know, good on you for driving the awareness and doing the work that you're doing. But I think there's so much more that needs to be done, research. Because I feel like I think there's so much more to understand. I don't think it's just that.
There's a lot more.
Yeah.
And, you know, with menopause being around from a context of a language and what the impact on it, andropause needs to step up and step in. Even today when people speak about andropause, they're like, oh, it's andropause.
Yeah.
You know, no, it's just andropause.
Mm-hmm.
It means things are changing.
Yeah.
How ready are you for change? And the same thing, you know, as you said, celebrate those moments. And as I always believe that even for young girls, involve your dad. Why can't the male figure have the conversation, have a pack prepared for you and say, because that's a reality, that we are no longer differentiated between often mom and dad, and then dads now play a role and women play a role as well. I mean, often I know when I was married, I mean, I was the happy-go-lucky stepdad, you know, whatever you want, whatever you need. If you need a discipline, we'd have a conversation. Here, where the mother. It's a very different level of the game, firm, stern, and so forth. But I ended up going to buy my stepdaughter iPads and so forth. Her mom had conversations from when she was young, so she understood what would happen. So emotional preparedness at any point in change for men and for women become something that needs language, resonance, for connection, for belonging as humans. Because we go through our own paths, but we're still on the same map.
But you know what, just as you were saying that, I'm just thinking, and I was just reminded of my childhood for a second there. How many times as young children, or when we were going through our periods, our emotions were not intact, but we got disciplined for perhaps not behaving in a certain way, but it was actually due to hormonal changes, which was not a conversation. Like the conversation was not about, my dad has never had a conversation with me. And I think dads and moms need to have a conversation so that when those incidences happen, that also as a young girl, you are able to say, listen, mom, dad, I know that you want to discipline me, but actually this is, you know, I'm going through my period, and please can you just be a little bit more patient? Because I think if we learn those things as a young child from the beginning, and as a younger girl, I think that that would have far better development as you grow older. Because I think that was a thing that was lacking. Because you see, when I was 12 years old, I was always grounded. I was always disciplined. I was always in trouble. My mom says I was the worst child she's ever had. And I was such a rebel because when I was younger. But I'm thinking maybe a lot of it didn't actually have to do with the real conversations. You know, it's one thing to say, oh, they're going through puberty. I think there's a lot more to it. I think it's understanding also the changes in our bodies and knowing that there's a emotional output to it.
Mm-hmm. And also I just want to off-ramp and just add on this conversation since we're talking andropause and menopause. I've been in a space where someone mentioned andropause as if like, oh, we finally found something to weaponize, you know, when men say menopause, it's like andropause, you know, like we always like at loggerheads, like we always must find something to fight each other against. And it's like, no, these are normal phases of life. Obviously, I mean, andropause presents differently as you've mentioned it. We lose our eggs. Eventually, women, we're no longer going to be able to fall pregnant. While men do produce sperm, it might be, a low sperm count. They can still find the children, all of that. But we need to be able to look at ourselves as whole in every phase of our reproductive lives, firstly. And also after watching this video, this conversation, I think we must put a disclaimer not to just use these terminologies without responsibility. Because I mean, one of the complaints that I've had with some of the women at work is men, the moment they know about menopause, then they're going to use it as a blanket statement for anything and everything. You're speaking up your mind, standing up for yourself. You've got too much sleep. It must be this menopause thing. You doing this. It must be menopause.
And victimizing.
You understand?
Yeah.
So the same way that more people are going to learn about andropause, it's not now that you're like, yeah, it's andropause. Go educate yourself some more. And also treat all of these things with the dignity that they deserve.
Yes.
I think that's one of the things that I don't like about this mainstream of these conversations, as much as we're making great strides, but they get to be made to be so gimmicky. Some of the videos are so over exaggerated, and all of that is too over the top. It's like, we need to find humor in all of this. So it's not getting up. Okay. Find humor in it. Oh, you struggled also. Maybe you were laughing, and then because of the bladder incontinence issues, and then you let out a bit of a pee. Find humor in it without
shaming it.
Yes, shaming and also exaggerating about it. So the more we're having these conversations, we still need to be responsible about them, have the right dignity that is needed so that we are able to allow people to mask off. Because that's another thing that puts people off, that the moment I mask off, then I'm going to be labeled the thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be used against me. So I'd rather than just have go through it with my head down.
And it's so true because, I mean, we're used to that. Like, are you having your PMS? Like, I mean, like, I was like at school and that thing was thrown around. And you learn from the parents and all of that. And then you go through your career and it's always the thing when you put your foot down. Yeah. It's like those stigmatized conversations. But I think it's so true. There needs to be accountability in how these terms are used, and also for men going through andropause. But anyway,
I am dunning now. I see the studios going, 1 hour. Listen, this is a phenomenal conversation. I just want to say thank you so much. Oh, I'm going to love you guys. Guys, it's just so awesome.
They have a stronger refractory period. They'll tell you. The next recording is coming up.
I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today and for us to have a real robust and authentic conversation around these topics, because it needs to get out there. And keep up with the good work. Keep on doing what you're doing, shining and vibing. And now, over to you. Thank you so much for joining in on this conversation. Hope you loved it. Click on the links below if you want to get the book. You want to show the book? The Perimenopausal Globetrotter. There you go. Have a look. Getting that on camera? Below. Got that? Okay. There you go. Click on the link below to get a copy of the book. And then also to Ronald, if you want to reach out to him, link below. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.